The wait is finally over. Baseball season is here at last, and the excitement continues all season long at DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy partner of Major League Baseball. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, just instant cash, instant gratification. Why wait until the end of the season to claim victory when you can win huge cash every day? At DraftKings, it's like a brand new season every time you play. Just select two pitchers and eight position players, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to an enormous payday. Last year, Peter from Colorado won $1 million at DraftKings in one day, just playing fantasy baseball. Hundreds of thousands of fantasy sports fans just like you have already cashed in at DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code Spreaker to play for free. You could win part of $300 million in prizes being awarded this season. Use promo code Spreaker for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nass, the Student of the Game. Weezy is not with us today. He's going to be headed to Seattle for his brother's wedding. So, hey, congratulations to David and the would-be Diana. Really good times there all the way around. But, nonetheless, we still have Awesome in the studio, our fireman extraordinaire, our community hero, Chris Rankin, aboard. And you know what? There's no problem. We can hold this show down. I'm not worried. Are you worried?
No, I'm not worried at all.
I think you would be. I mean, look, I understand. One of the things you're going to have to understand, we do this show in Florida out of my studio here in my house, which is really kind of a converted room. I mean, is it so bad having a closet full of football jerseys, though, staring at, well, I mean, they're not staring at you. Your back is to them. But I don't know. I think it's appropriate to a football environment. But the disadvantage to that is right outside the window here, there's a massive thunderstorm or something going on out there. So if you hear some rumblings, it's not that we forgot to have dinner before the show. That would be actual lightning taking place. So there you go. But I'll tell you what. We have a better shot here of having a good studio than Tom Brady apparently is a good pitcher. Did you see this? The thing with the Brady throwing the pitch in the dirt? He's probably looking it up right now. I mean, a reminder to all the folks out there that Chris is, in fact, a Giants/Jets fan. And we'll let him have two fan hoods because we've been letting Weasel get away with it for years on this show before Chris got here. So there's no way I could – okay, well, actually, I can make fun of both of you. But I don't know. Making fun of a Jets fan at this point is kind of cruel, don't you think?
Yeah, everyone else does. It's kind of overdone.
I don't even care anymore. You get to that point where – it's just, I think you've reached that numb stage, you know.
It's like you almost look for reasons not to make fun of him anymore because you just feel so bad.
You start seeing commercials with Sally Struthers. This is a Jets fan. And for just 60 cents a day, you can help them find a better quarterback. Oh, it's terrible.
If they ran that commercial, I'd probably make a lot of money.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You know, honestly, that sounds like something that would be on Key and Peele or something like that. I don't know. I don't know if that's up there with Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, I think that's funny stuff. He's looking in effigy at this video.
Yeah, I'm like analyzing it. I'm trying to see, like how far in front of the base it hit.
So this hit
like a good 3 or 4 feet in front of that base, in front of home plate.
So it's not so much that he didn't get there as he just shanked it. I mean, it wasn't 50 cent bad, but it makes you wonder. I don't know. Allegedly.
And it's outside.
And it's outside. So it's off and it's short.
It didn't even make it to the batter's box yet.
But it was Wes Welker's fault that they lost that Super Bowl to the Giants the second time, right? I'm just saying.
Maybe if this was a few years ago, then he might have made it to the plate.
Wow. The Tom Brady is getting old, Schmack. Maybe. Even fresh after an alleged Super Bowl MVP.
Maybe they need to check the baseball, see if it was at the right inflation level.
Oh, there we go. I'm kind of disappointed I didn't think of that myself. That's on me. Wow. Now, granted, the saving grace is there's out on Twitter that I think it's Pedro Martinez. I don't know. It's a baseball player, but he took batting practice really well, which there's all sorts of undertones there. I won't go into it further because this is a family show, but yeah. Anyways, so there you go. Tom Brady bad at pitching but good at hitting or whatever. I don't know. More pointless to the game of football, this story or the fact that Russell Wilson keeps talking about being a dual sport athlete.
Yeah, I think Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, because, I mean, he's also talked about being a point guard behind center. So him thinking in terms of multiple sports, not a new concept. Just throwing that out there. I don't know. Anyway, so now that I've wasted enough time being silly and talking about the defending Super Bowl champs quarterback and all that. This next story, I mean, granted, it's a number of days old now. It happened shortly after we did our show last week. But Troy Polamalu's retirement. First of all, let's be clear about one thing. Dude was 12 years in, okay? Him retiring, not making me sad. It was time for him to go because I don't think Polamalu could be Polamalu anymore. I mean, it's that simple, right?
No, he hasn't been in the last few years. Ever since the injuries like 3 years ago.
True. Well, and I mean, Polamalu at 80% is still far more mobile and able to get everywhere all over the field than a lot of safeties in the league right now. So, I mean, from that alone, in the modern era, when it comes to safeties, I mean, once Lynch and Ed Reed retired, the next quote-unquote great safety to retire was going to be Polamalu. I think you'll agree with that.
Yeah, right.
So, let me ask you this question, because it's something I heard them talking about in general throughout the sports media airwaves. Polamalu among great Steeler players, not just defensive players in general. Like, you know, this would include, like, let's say the Franco Harrises and the Stallworths and the Bettises and all that. But where do you rank Polamalu all time as a Steeler, among Steeler players? You know, I think that's tough to me. A lot of people were throwing out top five. A lot of people were throwing out top 10. I don't know. Instinct, where do you land?
Yeah, I don't think top 10.
You don't think top 10?
No, maybe top 15.
Well, I mean, it has to be top 15, right? I mean, because when you kind of walk through it, right? So I put him ahead of Bradshaw because, let's be honest, that dude is circumstance. That dude is Russell Wilson, all right? He's a game manager before they invented the term game manager. I'm convinced of this. You will not take that away from me. But this includes what? Mean Joe Green, Jack Lambert, Hines Ward, John Stallworth. I was about to say Dante. That's his son.
Right.
Lynn Swann, just coming off the top of my head, trying to name some names here. Jerome
Bettis.
Jerome Bettis has said him. I would put Polamalu ahead of Bettis. Absolutely. I don't think that's close. But I mentioned Mean Joe Green, I think. If I didn't, there he is. So I'll put it this way, right? I would put Mean Joe ahead of him. I would put Franco Harris ahead of him, not just because of his playing prowess and the four rings, but because the immaculate reception. Is that cheesy? Yeah, but that's still what I'm doing. Deal with it. Lynn Swann, I think, should go ahead of him, because that dude made what I still think is the single most amazing catch in NFL history against the Cowboys. I think that was even a Super Bowl at that. That one where, like, he kind of pirouettes and spins over the guy and then catches the way. I'll show you the video later after the show. It sucks to describe a video because this is a radio show, not TV, right? I don't know that I put Stallworth ahead of him necessarily. But let's submit it to this. More important Steeler to the franchise, Troy Polamalu or Hines Ward?
I'd say Troy Polamalu.
You would? Probably, okay. Yeah. Because here's where I'm at. Like, because a lot of people are trying to... First of all, they pose the question, is he the greatest safety of all time? No. Stop it. That can't... No. No. Okay. First of all, Ronnie Lott, I win. Go home.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
B, John Lynch, I win, go home. Okay. I think he's better than Ed Reed, but not because Ed Reed is necessarily a worse safety. I think Ed Reed had better supporting cast throughout the life of his career, right? When you look up front, in front of him was always pretty much Ray Lewis and Haloti Ngata. And when there wasn't Haloti Ngata, there was Tony Siragusa instead.
I can live with that. Yeah, I know one's a D-tackle, one's a D-end, whatever. And Terrell Suggs, by the way, in front of him for a good portion of that. Paul Amalu in front of him, sure he had Brett Kiesel. Sure he had James Harrison, Larry Foote, James Ferrier, Lawrence Timmons. But Ike Taylor on one side as a short, undersized corner. And Ryan Clark, for the years he was there, and Chris Hope as another safety, that was pretty good. Bernard Pollard was there for a good amount of time to assist Ed Reed. I don't know. I'll put it this way. I feel like Paul Amalu did more all over the field, whereas Ed Reed is known pretty much to just ball hawk and be a threat to stop the long ball from happening. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, I mean, I'll pop quiz you. Ed Reed or Troy Paul Amalu? See?
Well, they're two different types of players, I think.
Exactly.
So, you kind of, it's, they're both... I mean, if you can have both of them on the same team, you're great at safety right there.
Oh, my God, right?
Because Troy Polamalu is more of the attacking type, and Ed Reed's more of the ball-hawking type.
Right, Polamalu would be the strong safety. There. Right. There's not a question. Oh, my right. God. I think I'm not going to be able to stand up for about 5 minutes after you said that. God.
So, I mean, you can't really – I mean, Troy Polamalu is more like a, you know, like a John Lynch, more of a strong safety.
Yeah. He's everywhere.
Right.
He's everywhere. And the reason why I would put Lynch ahead of Polamalu is because he made everyone else better. He made a star of Dexter frickin' Jackson.
Yep.
Can we talk about that again real quick? I know I brought it up before. That's why I say that. But Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu is a pairing. I don't know what to do with that. That's pretty awesome. Do you even need a corner at that point? And oh, by the way, okay, here we go. Check this out. Here's your pop quiz. This is your fault. I just thought of this. More scary as a duo, Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed, or, you probably know where this is going to go already, Vince Wilfork and J.J. Watt.
Oh, jeez.
Damn it.
I'd say Vince Wilfork and J.J. Watt.
I because, do, too, because J.J. Watt.
Right, but... If you have that strong defensive line presence, you can put anyone back there to cover. But if you have the strong safety thing, they're going to run a lot, so you need to play the presence. You know, it's you can take the safety out of the game. It's kind of hard to take the defensive line out of the game. You know
I mean, well, I'll put it this way. I mean, just look at the Super Bowl game. The Seahawks kind of did that. All they had to do was double-team Wilfork. Yeah, same guy. Duh. Wilfork. In the Super Bowl to take him out of the game. Now, granted, it's a lot better having J.J. Watt in support than Rob Ninkovich, for example. Not to say that Rob Ninkovich is a bad player. I think he's slightly overrated, but that's a detail. Not to say that Rob Ninkovich is a bad player, but he's not J.J. Watt. You know. And I like what you said about if you have enough pressure, you don't need a safety. But then again, if you have good coverage... you're going to get more sacks. However, that being said, fundamentally speaking, you are correct. It all starts up front. I agree with you, Vince Wilfork and J.J. Watt, also because J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt and the world's fastest immovable object on one line. I know I said this all last week, but you know what? It's still true, damn it. You can't take that away from me. Let's see. You know what? I'm going to jump around the list a little bit here. Because I got some other stuff that I want to save for when we talk to Josh Zimmer. Hopefully he'll be calling us here at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central, to talk a little bit of draft schmack with us. But, yeah, I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing, first of all, through the press release with the Dolphins, I saw that Greg Jennings visited. Then I saw that Greg Jennings also visited the Jags. Both very intriguing concepts, if you ask me. First of all, I think we'll agree, Greg Jennings not being in Minnesota anymore, good plan, right?
Right.
He's going to be asked to do way too much with Bridgewater, who's not a bad quarterback, per se, but certainly has a few more growing pains left to go. And I think the Vikings are in a better position to acquire other pieces they need with Jennings gone, right? You agree with that?
Right. I mean, they already got Mike Wallace as well from the Dolphins.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, I got to keep forgetting that. So that's interesting. So if Greg Jennings ends up Miami, they essentially traded receivers, but whatever. And Wallace to the Vikings makes Jennings less necessary, I'll put it that way. I don't want to say dead weight because I think he still has some good football left in him. But to you, does Jennings make more of a difference in Jacksonville or in Miami?
I think that he'll be asked a lot down there in Miami, I think. I think in Jacksonville, he'll have a bigger impact, kind of, if you say, because, I mean, Miami, he'll be back with Philbin, who was his, you know, offensive coordinator when he was with the Packers.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Good so he can fit the system while he already knows the plays and everything like that.
Right.
But down there, I mean, you got Landry as a receiver and Stills. I mean, they're both kind of young, but they're kind of.
Well, Juwan Landry has shown that he's got talent. Right. Stills has shown he's got potential.
Right. So then, I mean, you got Jennings as a third, but, I mean, you put him up there with those other two second-year players now with Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee. With Greg Jennings as a possession receiver, because the other two guys aren't. Right. And then also you got Julius Thomas up there. That's what I'm saying. I think he'll have a bigger impact on the Jags team more than he would on the Dolphins.
Well, I'll say this. Okay, so if he ends up in Miami, he's going to get more playing time.
Right.
I think that's clear as day. Excuse me. Because, well, foremost... The Dolphins don't have a tight end now, so they're going to be running a whole lot of spread, methinks. But the thing I like most about him in Jacksonville, I'm with you, but for a different reason. Everybody who's got talent out there that's a skill position player on offense is youth, except, of course, Mercedes Lewis. I'll give him credit there. He's the veteran guy now. But if Jennings comes in... all those guys. Not even Cecil Shorts the third is out. Okay, he's in Houston now. If he were still there, I think he's 5 years in. He would have been the veteran presence. That ain't aged, you know. Again, other than Mercedes Lewis, the Jags don't have a whole lot of years there. They're not long in the tooth, as the kids like to say, right?
Right.
So it seems to me to make sense to have Greg Jennings in place. Then, you know, I mean, what's the stuff you start hearing the people talk about when it comes to receivers during this draft time of year, right? 40 times. Completely overrated, by the way. You and I both know this.
Right.
You don't hear about shuttles for receivers, but I would argue that that's singularly more important for the next reason, route running, right? Yep. I mean, dude, not to draw too much silly parallels, but you've seen me, a fat guy, get open easier than a skinny guy, granted more in our college years, but just because I know how to run a route correctly. And that could be the difference in the NFL. Like, when you take steps at a particular time could be the difference between perfect timing or PU timing, so to speak, right? So Jennings going there, granted, I like the part that you said about Philbin in Miami, that would help his chances to play. That would make him fit in very nicely. I completely forgot about that, too. But I don't know. I think when you have that much youth, somebody has to be learned and seasoned, as they say, to make things go right. I mean, Bortles, who's an experienced guy that Bortles throwing the football to? Again, not counting Mercedes Lewis. It ain't there, right?
Right. No, it is. And then I think Mercedes Lewis has passed his time anyway up there.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the game I went to. He had like three drops, too. And he had a ton of drops last year.
Oh, really?
Wow. So I think his time's about up. They had another guy, what was it, Clay Harbor?
Yes.
I think. He came on strong as a tight end.
Agreed. He got hurt, too, I think.
But. Right. So I could see, you know, with Julius Thomas and Clay Harbor, because as their tight ends, I can see them kind of releasing Mercedes Lewis. He's kind of getting up there in age.
Yeah,
also,
he's been playing for about a decade, so I mean, his time is coming.
So, but with Greg, with Greg Jennings there, you can move Marquise Lee into a slot receiver to a more fitting NFL fitting position for him. So I would have Greg Jennings on the outside, and I'd have Marquise Lee in the slot.
Can you imagine? So Greg Jennings and Marquise Lee lining up side to side. That's a tall pair of receivers, too. Not for nothing. But I didn't even think about that. The whole size concept there.
Right,
too.
Or I mean, even Allen Robinson could fit in the slot,
so
too.
The
three,
you got some towering dudes up in
right.
there.
Right. So, as I said, I think he'd make more of an impact in Jacksonville than he would in Miami.
Is it too soon to say, regardless of whether they get Jennings or not, if they got Jennings, obviously it would help. I mean, and the answer to this question is obviously yes, but I'm still going to pose it this way. Is it too soon to say? No, check that. I'll ask it this way, because it's always too soon to say, because we even have the damn draft yet. Are you more optimistic today about the Texans staff as a team and their ability to try to surpass the Colts, or are you more optimistic in the Jags' ability to have evolved and improved and get past the Colts and up? Because let's call it what it is. The Colts are still the favorite today, probably already.
Right.
If you were going to be, you know, ridiculously premature in putting your division predictions out, which, I mean, hey, look, you know the rule. We could talk all the smack now. It's what? April 13th, you know, that first Monday before opening day of September is when we lock it in. So we're still 5 months away. But are you more optimistic today about the Jags or about the Texans?
You know,
go ahead.
It's, you know, it's kind of tough. It's what the Texans have on defense. Jags defense isn't that bad either, but their presence with Wilfork and Watt there, they have a good defense there. The only problem is they don't have that well of a receiving core. I mean, you got DeAndre Hopkins. You don't have a quarterback.
You have DeAndre Hopkins, and you have Cecil Shorts the third.
Right.
That's pretty much it.
Yep. So you still need to get other receivers, tight end, quarterback.
Because Jags
on offense is young. So if they brought in Greg Jennings on the offense, they could just concentrate on defensive line and offensive line, really, in the draft, and maybe linebackers. And that would almost solidify their team. They're young. I mean, their secondary has, I think, averaged 3 years.
Their secondary is just like their receiver core, right?
Right. So, I mean, their secondary is young. They're all young together. They've been playing, you know, the game I went to, I thought they played pretty good.
Yeah.
And they're the front, you know, front four, you know, you get another defensive tackle in there and then fix the linebackers and get some offensive line to protect Bortles. I think you're going to have, in 2 years, I think they're going to be challenging. This year, I don't see it. So I'd maybe say, if I had to pick between the two, I'd say maybe the Texans right now. But 2 years from now, I might say the Jags. Just how much youth they have on the team.
Another thing I just thought of is I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, if Jennings went to Miami, he wouldn't be in a position to face Vernon Maxwell. Check that. Brandon Browner, nor would he face Darrell Revis. But there's still some defensive presence in the AFC East, right? I mean, actually, the best corners in the AFC East are on his team. But if you ask me, with Brent Grimes in play.
I mean, he still had to face Revis. So Revis is a Jet.
Okay, you're right. But you're right. I forgot that Revis was a Jet.
But so. Revis will probably be covering Landry now, or Stills.
Maybe they'll move him around. Who knows? But I'll say this. Name me a good corner that plays in the AFC South. Go. Okay, he's thinking really hard.
You can name a safety.
Okay.
Jonathan Cyprian, the safety for the Jags.
Say it one more time, a little louder.
Jonathan Cyprian.
So, in other words, he'd be playing with the who's the best cover guy, in your opinion, in that division already, too.
Right.
Now, me, I think Jonathan Joseph is a good corner, and
right.
he may arguably be the best in the division. I'd have to, obviously, check my sources again, but today that's where I think that my answer would be if I was hard pressed. And the Jags have a relatively weak secondary.
Vontae Davis with the Colts.
With the Colts. Actually, you know what? Vontae Davis good. Probably is. The, you're right.
He was my pick that game against the Broncos. And, you know,
yeah.
He was my MVP, I thought.
You know what? Vontae Davis should be the answer.
So it would be Vontae Davis.
Yeah, we both screwed that up. But yeah.
Well, there you go. Vontae Davis. That took me a second.
Yeah. Like, no, you're right. And I literally came up with it right now. So Vontae Davis is your best coverage guy. And again, is he going to cover Greg Jennings?
No, probably not.
Probably not. They may even move him over to cover Julius Thomas. Who knows? I have no idea. But what I do know is this. Jennings in Jacksonville, that's a good receiver core, period. However, there's not another team in that division that has a defense like the Texans. That's why this is a tough conversation. But Hoyer or Bortles, still a reasonable question. The jury's still out on both. We've seen both succeed and fail, but Hoyer has a longer resume and more skepticism attached to him. I don't know. The South, because it's so, lacking a better word, unpredictable at current, we have no idea what we're going to get talent-wise, makes it a bit more intriguing. But anyways, there you go. All that for Greg Jennings visiting two teams. This is what happens in off-season football. You just take a topic and run with it. You got to love it. But, another piece I wanted to dance with, and we've kind of talked about this before. The Patriots have lost their corners. The Patriots have lost the world's fastest immovable object. And, yeah. Is there any reason? They're not going to repeat. I think I could safe that say.
I don't think they will.
Okay.
No.
I'm just making sure.
Because, I mean, if you look at it, is their 2002, 2003, I think when they went back-to-back, what they had was...
Maybe 3-4. I got
3-4, whatever. The two back-to-back, and then they skipped a year and then had another one.
Right.
What they had there was a good receiving core. Underrated receiver core. I mean, you had, Troy Brown.
Deion Branch.
Right. Those guys made names for themselves up there.
And good running games as well. I mean, people forget Corey Dillon, Kevin Falk. Those were solid dudes
right.
as well.
But they also had Ty Law, Asante Samuel, at cornerback.
Well,
you know,
hey,
still, wasn't Wilfork there then, too?
Wilfork, Willingham.
Right.
Not Willingham, I'm sorry. Wilfork, Ty Warren, Richard Seymour, excellent front there. Brewski, Roosevelt Colvin, Willie McGinnis.
Right.
Mike Vrabel, excellent front there. Defensive line and linebacker. Hell, Vrabel's more famous for catching touchdowns in the Super Bowl than he is playing linebacker. But, oh, by the way, happened to play a good linebacker as well.
Right.
You know.
But then they also had Ty Law and Asante Samuel corner.
By the way.
Yeah. So, I mean.
I don't know if they had them at the same time. Oh,
no, they did have them at the same time.
Okay, well, damn it. And then on top of that, somewhere in there, Lawyer Malloy and or Rodney Harris.
Right.
But it was Brady that did it.
Right. So they had a defense. When they lost to the Giants in 2007. And was it 2012?
What happened now?
When they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl.
2007 and
2012.
Was it? No, it wasn't 11. 2012. That's the Niners and the Ravens.
Right, 11, 10, whatever it was. You know,
I think it's 2007 to 2009, I think. Because 2010 was the Saints. Chris is going to look it
right.
up.
But anyway, during that, what they didn't have corners.
No, they didn't.
And what they have this year when they won it, they had corners. Is what
the
I'm
best,
saying.
The best pair of corners
right.
they had in at least a decade.
Right.
As
so
it was written in the matchup mania.
Yeah. So that's what I was saying. They had corners when they won it 10 years ago. And they will have corners this time when they lost to the Giants.
Damn.
They didn't have any corners.
Yeah. And they did not have, other than Wilfork, have the presence up front. Don't be trying to sell me Rob Ninkovich. Compared
and
to
Chandler
Teddy
Jones.
Brewski.
They kept talking about Chandler Jones, and
Stop.
Every time they kept showing him, he was out of position.
Anyways, you know, we got Josh Simmer in here waiting on the line. We'll get the draft questions to him. But first, we have some very important messages that need to go out here. So hang out. We'll be right back very shortly after this break here on the Student Game here on NGSC Sports. See you in 60. The wait is finally over.
Baseball season is here at last, and the excitement continues all season long at DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy partner of Major League Baseball. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, just instant cash, instant gratification. Why wait until the end of the season to claim victory when you can win huge cash every day? At DraftKings, it's like a brand new season every time you play. Just select two pitchers and eight position players, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to an enormous payday. Last year, Peter from Colorado won $1 million at DraftKings in one day, just playing fantasy baseball. Hundreds of thousands of fantasy sports fans just like you have already cashed in at DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code SPREAKER to play for free. You could win part of $300 million in prizes being awarded this season. Use promo code SPREAKER for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
You know, I gotta go this way with the I'm the man theme. Because, well, I don't know. When it comes to the draft, we're gonna have Josh Zimmer in here in a minute, and as far as NGSC Sports is concerned, he's the man when it comes to the draft. But before we get in here, Chris, the Super Bowls, if you please.
Yeah, it was for the Patriots, the ones they won originally was 2000. It was in 2002, but it was a 2001 season.
Okay.
And then, so it'd be 2004, 2005, which was the 2003, 2004 season. The ones they won.
What did I say? 3 and 4?
Yeah, we said 3 and 4, geez. Right.
Boo. No, not really.
So, but then when they lost, it was 2007, but the Super Bowl was in 2008.
Right.
It was 2007 season, and then also it was the 2011 season, so it was 2012.
Ah, so. Damn it, it was. Okay, so it was 2011. Right. Okay, that makes sense. So 2012 didn't sound right.
Right. Well, that was when the Super Bowl was 2012.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That's not the first time that's thrown me off, I'll be honest, because the mortal coil. So anyways, let's go ahead and bring the man in, the guy who is not only the esteemed host of the NGSC Sports Weekly, but also the man in the mind, one of the man in minds, I should say, behind the Draft Central site on NGSCSports.com. If you don't know it, you better ask somebody. It's just drenched in draft awesome. And no, not just beer, although beer is awesome too. But a man who is just as awesome as beer, Mr. Josh Zimmer. Josh, what is going on, my man?
Hey, not a whole lot. I'm doing great. Actually just had a draft come toward me, so I figured I'd share that now before we get into it. One of the guys who we profile on our website for our draft journey series, and a good friend of mine, Alex Singleton, a linebacker for Montana State, just got a call from the Cincinnati Bengals, and he will be flying out Thursday, and he will be one of two prospects they're flying out for a private workout.
That's
so,
what I'm talking about.
Other than that, I can say that I'm doing pretty damn fantastic, because that was great news. It's been news that I've been waiting on for the last probably 2 weeks. Since his pro day, and so I'm on cloud nine right now. I'm extremely happy for him. And with that being said, I'm ready to talk some draft stuff.
Well, first of all, quickly, Josh, have you ever received a better compliment than being told you're as good as, if not better, than beer?
You know, I haven't. I will say this: I did listen to the intro. Along with our draft stuff, a lot of beer is consumed while doing the draft stuff. Because I tell you what, you need fuel. You need fuel in order to stay up and do what we do. And I'm not plugging a promo or anything like that, because any of them is a preference to me, being a young college kid. But a good amount is taken in during the week doing our draft stuff, and to be honest, I'm going to give it a little bit of a prop. That might be why it's so good. I don't know. That might be a good preference start
yeah.
for that.
Hey, you know what? That's what got the Beatles good with their songs, allegedly, was drug use. So why can't beer make your draft picks awesome? And I mean, by the way, if, for those of you who don't know, find out now here. This is going to be one of the guys that'll be on the first ever NGSC Sports mock draft that I will be hosting on Thursday, but I will be a host alone, okay? I get to be Nick Fury, and I'm going to be Nick Fury if I'm under attack, the constant weapons that come out of my car, like in the second Captain America movie, are what you're going to see. And just one of them, of course, Mr. Josh Zimmer. But enough of this love fest. Bro, I saw your mock. I saw Montel Hardy's mock. Both excellent work. Of course, I'm not talking smack on your work. But there is something I have to point out about your mock draft 4.0 that you released. I believe you released it today, matter of fact.
Yeah, this morning.
Yeah, awesome. So here's my thing. And granted, I'm just a student of the game. But you stated yourself that April is the month of lies for the draft. And I don't see how you could believe the lie that the Titans are all about one Zach Mettenberger. Chris is drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. I don't see it. Why would they dodge Mariota in what I think is just they have to have a quarterback kind of situation? What am I missing? Educate me, my man.
Well, the biggest thing, and as much as I've been mocking Winston to number one for the last, I'd say, last three that we've released, I'm falling more and more in love with the fact that I don't think it could happen. But since I released it, we'll go off of that. With Winston going one and Mariota sliding in my mock, number two, to be honest right now, Tennessee is going to be a match made in heaven for any team that wants to trade up, because they have a guy in Mettenberger who, like you said, not a whole lot of people are drinking the Kool-Aid yet, but the people who matter and who are making the calls are drinking that Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. And that's the guys in the office within the Titans organization that have said, you know what, we could potentially move on with this kid and at least prove him. That's the one thing. With them taking him in the third or fourth round last year, I can't believe which round it was, they have to at least show that, you know what, we didn't draft this kid just because he was the best guy on our board. We had to have seen something in him. So they have to at least give him a year to prove himself as a full-time starter, to say, hey, you know what, this guy can do it. And realistically, too, I don't really think Marcus Mariota fits Ken Whisenhunt's mold of a quarterback. You look at some of the QBs that he's worked with, and the reason why I think Mettenberger would be an okay fit, at least until you can wait in 2016, if you have to take a QB, if you're Tennessee, he's big. He takes a while. You know, he's kind of like a Ben Roethlisberger. I've heard a lot of comparisons to Ben Roethlisberger, and so, hell, why not? I'll use that. He is kind of like a Ben Roethlisberger. He's big, has an arm. The dude has a cannon. So he can stand back there. He can make any NFL throw you want. The knee injuries are a little bit, those are kind of a red flag. Those are something that makes you question why I have them not taking a quarterback. But the reason why I have them taking Leonard Williams is because, again, like I said, they need to prove to Mettenberger that, hey, you need to prove to us that you're the guy or not. We got you a year to do it, and that's it.
Yeah.
And when you add a guy like Leonard Williams to that, that defense has basically kind of become a little revamped. They let Derek Morgan go, who is a very underwhelmed player, you can say the least, when he was in Tennessee. Some injuries, just the fact that he wasn't very productive.
Yeah.
But then they basically replaced that with Brian Arafo. Now,
the
one thing that Tennessee has, and they've had it for a while, is they've had a pretty darn good front four, but particularly the two inside defensive tackles, the way they've been able to move them around have been pretty solid. Now, the only star they have is Jarrell Casey. You get a guy like Leonard Williams, you're basically getting a type of, kind of like how baseball uses the five tools to grade a prospect. He is kind of a five-tool defensive lineman in that aspect. You could play him as a nose in 3-4 situations, pass, you know, nickel or dime type situations. Bring him in, he can be a nose rusher. If you feel comfortable with it, he has the athleticism and he has the agility, the lateral agility, to be a five shade. But he also is very dominant and has showed his dominance while at USC as a three technique. And anytime you compare former teammates together, you know chemistry is going to rub off. And the fact that Jarrell Casey comes from USC makes it an enticing pick. Now, what I will stamp on it is that I do think Tennessee is throwing up a lot of smoke screens right now. just to entice the teams that want to trade up to get Marcus Mariota. Now, if Winston falls, it's a completely different scenario. But, again, we'll go off of what I did. If Mariota's on the board at 2, Tennessee is going to be getting a lot of phone calls, and they could eventually make out as the winner of the draft in terms of a trade. Mm-hmm. Because in order for a team to jump up, say, the Cleveland Browns, or even maybe a team like the Jets who just want to move up 4 spots to get a guy because they're afraid that maybe Washington might take them, you know there's going to be extra baggage in terms of picks that come with that. Tennessee can definitely sit on that and be like, yeah, you know what? We have a lot of holes in our roster. Let's take it. Let's let them get their guy if they really believe in him, and we can go from there. So that's kind of what I've seen. Now, I know we released these 2 weeks apart, so it's kind of weird to see some of my difference. But I'm telling you, if I were to release one next week, it would change again, and I'd probably have Mariota going too. Tennessee is such a hard team to mock right now because there's so many different variables that are playing in. And if anybody's ever done a mock draft, you know that you just cannot mock a trade. It's 1 in a million chance you're going to get it right.
Yeah, no, that would be tough. I think about the only mock in recent form that you would have been able to predict what would be the Skins jumping up to get RG3 to put themselves in position to be whiffing for Griffin, as I put it,
yep,
in that year. And you know, well, and maybe you could put some insight on this, because I know it's one of my favorite guys to mock, your pardon expression, is Mike Mayock. And to suddenly decide at this point in time, 2 weeks until the draft, it's not like they've had a pro day per se. It's not like they've had, I don't know, any other kind of workouts or anything else that'll really move you. At this point, changing from Mariota to Jameis in your quarterback rating, in my opinion, is kind of silly. I mean, what could you possibly see leading up to the draft? What is it? 2 weeks before-ish. That could change your mind that vastly to switch your 1 and 2.
It's exactly how you said it, man. It's silly. Now, I respect Mike Mayock. I mean, the guy's been doing his job for a long time, but you got to understand the position where he's in now. It doesn't matter what he says. To be truly honest, it really doesn't matter what he says, because there's people out there who are going to eat it up. So
yeah,
why not make, and what's the biggest thing the NFL's turned into is it's turned into a money machine. Well, how are they going to be able to keep a money machine if everybody's on the same page for their TV shows that they decide to create every year and they have a new one coming out, it seems like? Well, they throw a guy in and say, hey, let's do it. You guys need to figure out what you're going to do. Yeah. And so I truly think that he does it just to create debate and controversy for the shows, because if you've kind of watched him before, you'll see that his boards change, and then once the draft truly rolls around, like on a Wednesday or even maybe that afternoon, you'll notice that, you know, they'll have the best available. His best available does not even come close to what he had as his original big board.
Uh-oh, controversy.
Like, exactly. Like, his initial big board is pretty damn good, to be honest. It's very on. Not a whole lot of controversy in terms of where they could see guys. And guys that might have controversial selections or placements are also being controversial in everybody else's. But over the time, he moves people up and down, and it creates nothing but debate. Because I'm telling you now, when the draft rolls around, his big board, his position rankings are going to change to where it doesn't make him look like he's an idiot when he's on TV. And now I'm not saying that as a stab at him. I'm just saying that as true facts.
Yeah,
that's
you're
just how he's been for the last 2 or 3 years since I've had enough time to cover it and really watch the draft.
Okay. Well, and that makes sense. I mean, if I like what you're saying as far as that, and who knows, I'll just say this, and you don't have to link yourself to it. He's essentially the guy that throws in multiple brackets into the March Madness and then wants to tell us how awesome he is when one of his brackets does good. I don't leave it. I'm just kidding. Chris, what do you have for Josh Zimmer?
Oh, I think I was looking at the Oakland pick with Kevin White, receiver for there. instead of Amari Cooper?
No. Kevin White, this is where I'm actually been catching the most flack, to be honest. my top five is, I actually just released my new top five, and you will not believe how hammered I've gotten on Twitter because of it. I have Amari Cooper as my number one. That's flat out. You want a guy who, for me, if I'm going to take a receiver, especially in the top five, which we know Oakland's going to be the first landing spot for him, unless the Jags do something stupid, which I wouldn't put it past them because they've done it before. Ooh, we just have to look back when they drafted Blake Bortles last year at number three overall.
Oh, no.
But
that's all. By the way, you are speaking anyway, to a pair of UCF alums. You got to be a little careful with that, Chief.
But when you want to take a receiver, you want a guy who has really no questions. And with me, Amari Cooper doesn't have any questions. The moment he stepped in to Tuscaloosa, he's been a dude. I mean, 70-plus receptions, 80-plus receptions. As a junior, 120-plus receptions. Kevin White, nobody knew who the hell Kevin White was until five games into the season this year. Last year, he came in his first year at West Virginia. He was a junior college transfer, had 50-some catches. But didn't have a different quarterback. Clint Kirkett was still the quarterback. Didn't have any receivers that outstarred him, because they were all sophomores and juniors as well. They came back. Then all of a sudden, as a senior, has that 120-some catch season and would basically just look like a man among dudes in the Big 12. That, to me, is a little bit of a red flag. I want a guy who's been consistent year in and year out, and that's why I have Jalen Strong as my number three. And this is where I've been getting hammered, is people are like, oh, well, he's not this, he's not that. Well, you watch his tape. When you got a guy who's 6'4", 220 pounds, a 4.46, where do you not see Calvin Johnson out of that? And if you really watch his tape, yeah, he might not release at the line of scrimmage, but you want to know who else didn't release very well at the line of scrimmage in college? Calvin Johnson. But you want a guy who you can throw the ball to in the end zone, and you know the only guy who's going to come down with it is either him or it's going to be thrown out of the back of the end zone, is Jalen Strong. This guy has, in my opinion, now I think Amari Cooper's the best. I think Jalen Strong has the opportunity to be the best out of this entire class, say 3-4 years down the road. It all depends on what situation he goes to. And with him being a little bit lower on people's boards, he could fall into a great position. Say maybe, you know, I have him going 16. I have him going 16 to the Houston Texans. Now he could fall even more. He goes to the Kansas City Chiefs, that's even better. You got a quarterback in Alex Smith. They just added Jeremy Maclin, so you know they have a proven receiver, since the receiver couldn't catch a cold last year, yet alone a touchdown pass. they had to depend on a tight end to catch their touchdowns last year. That tells you something. So you know it's going to be completely different there this year.
I would have said a running back myself.
So the receiver class, I figured out to be, next to the running backs, probably the hardest to really kind of pinpoint where guys can go. With the edge class, you kind of see, especially for me, you know, having a defensive line background, that's where I feel the most comfortable. And I know kind of where I stand with some of the guys, but receivers probably the toughest position in this class next to running back, because anything can happen. Anybody sees a player differently, and it's so deep. I mean, I don't think receiver or running back has been this deep in quite some time in terms of talent. We have guys who normally could be, say, maybe 5-10 years ago, first-round picks, and now they could be anywhere between the second and third round. And that's not necessarily saying because the role of running backs has changed in the NFL, but with this year's class with Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley, and the fact that the receiver class is so deep within the top five or even the top six, and then there's a little bit of a drop, people are going to be more worried about taking their edge player or taking a receiver more so when they take a running back. So those two classes are easily the deepest within this year's crop of prospects.
Wow. I mean, hey, look, Josh, not for nothing, that was a hell of an answer. but I feel like I could have given a shorter one to answer Chris's initial question. Because he has a low 40 time, and it's the Raiders. This is the team that took Darius Haywood Bay against Michael Crabtree. Boom, case closed. If you want to borrow that because it fits into 140 characters on Twitter for all your haters, go ahead and roll with it. I'm just throwing it. No. I like the point you made, though, about the receiver class versus the running back class and just the depth difference aside from the position, the position focus of the running back diminishing, quote, as it has. Personally, I think that depends on the coach. But so I know in your mock, going back to Mariota real quick, and I just want this to be a shorter one before we get into one more deep talk topic here. I've seen a mock, and I'm not going to mention the person's name because the person who had this on their mock is one of these cats that's out there just to bring more money into the money machine. But someone's going to try to tell me that Marcus Mariota is going to fall 17 picks to the Chargers. Am I wrong to just be righteously insulted that that person is getting paid to put that on a mock draft, or is there something to that?
Well, I mean, I really would love to talk to this guy to see where he kind of played this in his mind, because I'm looking at it now. I mean, you got teams. I mean, St. Louis, yeah, they got Nick Foles, but he's proven he's injury prone. Why not take a guy? Why not take Mariota? Jeff Fisher took Vince Young, for crying out loud. And in terms of a quarterback, Mariota is far along than what Vince Young was. Vince Young was just an athlete, but Mariota is actually a proven quarterback. People dog him for not being able to read defenses, but he can. You look at the Chicago Bears. I think if the Bears, if for some reason, Mark, you know, say I swap in my mock, say the Jets take Amari Cooper and really load up their talent for Geno Smith to make him kind of prove to the staff that he is the guy, I think the Bears could be a good fit there. Learn behind Jay Cutler for a year, and who knows, with how bad and how off and on Jay Cutler is, he could potentially even go in and say week 6 or week 7 or maybe even after the bye.
Wow.
I'm not buying the whole smokescreen thing about the Cleveland Browns. I think that's a bag of something else. I'm not believing it. I'm not buying it. There's a reason why they took Johnny Manziel. Yeah, unfortunately, he's kind of brought a black eye to the organization with him having to go to rehab and all of this. But you know what? That's just the luck of the Cleveland Browns. But they're going to work with him. I mean, I think that you can't throw him away after 1 year. You have to at least give him a year to prove himself. And when he only had 3 games to prove himself, that's not enough. But then you look at the Houston Texans at 16. Can't say Ryan Mallett's the guy. Yeah, they did get a quarterback with Brian Hoyer signing there, but that doesn't necessarily mean. I mean, there's a reason why Hoyer had a great year, and they still drafted Johnny Manziel. So, I mean, there's that.
Well, and because
so I don't see it. I think the only way he goes to San Diego is if San Diego trades up.
Yeah.
But it's going to be whoever can offer the most, offer the most money for them or the most picks.
Yeah, I like how you put that. And not for nothing, I always feel good when I say something that matches a credible draft analyst. And I've said myself that I don't see Manziel. I don't see Mariota falling past the Rams. It's just not going to happen. Of course, barring a trade to change everything up. I just, I said that last week. I stick with it now, especially now that Josh Zimmer has said it himself.
Right. I even said after, like, if his 7 he's still available, the Eagles are going to be doing anything they can to try to move up.
Trade up, yeah. I don't think that's a bad move necessarily if you're the Bears, trading around. Who knows? Maybe you can get some sort of a weapon out of it, if not just picks. I can't front on that. I don't know. But, Chris, you had something else?
Oh, yeah. You were talking about the running backs with the top 5, also with their running with wide receivers. So you put 2 running backs in the top in the first round, which I agree with. But who else follows, like, your next 3?
So you're asking if I have 2 in my first round I see 2 in my first round?
No, I agree with you with your 2. I'm just thinking who your top 5 running backs in the draft right now.
Oh, okay.
My top 5. Well, obviously, Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon. I have Melvin Gordon rated higher, number 1, because he's healthy, but he's also a little more of a patient runner. He comes from a true offense. in Wisconsin's West Coast type of offense. So he's a little bit more patient, but Todd Gurley probably has the higher ceiling than all of them. I really like J.J. from Boise State. I think this is the guy who kind of could be like a Doug Martin, but a little bit more valuable in terms of he doesn't really – he has a little bit of a fumbling issue, but that easily can be fixed. You can ask Tiki Barber that.
I believe
he led the league in fumbles. The next year he only had one. And then, you know, for my fourth and fifth, it kind of swaps. I really liked Amir Abdullah. Now, smaller running backs, especially with his size, are kind of starting to become a little favorable, but in terms of being a feature back, they're not. That's why the Vikings kind of have McKinnon as their, you know, spark plug type guy, and, you know, Darren Sproles and some of these other types of running backs, the Denard Robinsons of the world. But I really like what he has to bring to the table. He's a running back through and through. Nebraska, yeah, they run a little bit of the gun, but they also do run, you know, some under center. And anytime you get a running back who's used to running under center, it's really good. And then, you know, Tevin Coleman's also another type of running back that can be out there. I kind of see him like the LeSean McCoy type guy. Comes from Indiana, which is an offense that had a very poor offensive line, but it's a poor football team in general in the Big Ten. As bad as that hurts me to say, being a, you know, kind of a fan of the Big Ten.
Ooh.
But, you know, he's a guy that can kind of do it all. He can catch, he can receive, he could be a kick returner type guy. Duke Johnson is my five, and he's just, again, the one thing about Miami running backs is you never miss on a Miami running back.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, it's really, the last guy that they really missed on was Jarrett Payton, but he wasn't really even that good in college. And now I'm kind of dating myself because I think I was in middle school when he played in college still. Well, but
hey, it's
if
okay.
You go back and look at all of the backs that have been around, Frank Gore, Willis McGahee, Clinton Portis.
Yep.
The list basically just goes, you know, Lamar Miller most recently.
Well, let me
stop
you.
Go on and on and on.
I want to get one more question in with you, with Chris, before we wrap up. So, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, I was originally saying with the running backs, where'd you put T.J. Yeldon?
T.J. Yeldon? Yeah. We got about 3 minutes left, so keep that in mind, Josh.
T.J. Yeldon's my ninth. I don't like his size, but I mean, his size is kind of scary, and the fact that he kind of had his job taken away from him by Derrick Henry because he played so damn well down the stretch that Yeldon kind of disappeared. He's going to be a lightning type guy. Third, you know, I have him in the third round. He's going to be a special teamer to start out and then potentially could become a consistent third down back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Chris was a little shocked to hear ninth, but I like the description of the skill set. Who knows? Maybe he'll end up in a Chip Kelly offense one day or something like that, or who knows, right? That makes sense. I could be wrong. What do I know? But, Josh, man, before you go, make sure you tell all the people where they can find you and ask you whatever questions they can, leading, of course, up to Thursday night's NGSC's mock draft at 8:30 Eastern, by the way, if you want to check that out on the website. Of course, you can also check that out afterward on Spreaker and our various other listening outlets. But, Josh, tell the people where they can find you, my man.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at jzimmer_50NFL. And then also you can find all of my work and the work of many other hardworking people that we have on our team at ngscsports.com. And again, he's plugged it time and time again since I've been on the call. So, hell, you guys might as well tune in because it's going to be a great show. We've been cranking on this thing for the last 4.5 weeks, getting all the plans rolled out. And we're telling you right now, we're going to kill it. So make sure you guys tune in and listen to all of us basically give you our insight that we've been doing for the last 3 months.
I'll dig it, Josh. Hey, man, like I said, it's going to be fun being Nick Fury watching the Avengers do their thing on that night. If you hear any crunching in the background, that'll be me chewing on my popcorn, so don't be insulted, all right, brother?
Hey, not at all. Hey, might as well have your popcorn and pop next to you, because like I said, we're going to put on a show.
Wow, there you go. Josh Zimmer, thanks very much, brother.
Hey, thank you guys very much. You guys have a good rest of your evening.
See, that's definitely how you know how he's in Minnesota. Popcorn and pop. For those of you that live in the South, that's soda. Just for the record. Anyways, that'll do it for us here on the Student of the Game as well. Weasel, we missed you. We hope you have a good time and a pleasant flight up to Seattle. We'll see you next week where we talk about the NFL needs of the North, the Northern teams, and what spots they need to fill. And on Twitter, I am at the SOTG. Find Weasel at Weasel the SOTG. And Chris at Hydraulic Upright. That's still awesome! Hydraulic Upright. U-P-R-I-T-E for upright. But until next time, everybody. Class. They keep hiding the bell from me. Class dismissed.